As we near November, the 2020 presidential election is on everyone's mind. It's been called the election that will determine the soul of America, the election that will change the course of the nation forever. It's also the first U.S. presidential election to take place during a pandemic. Beyond the pressing question of who will win, lie others about the voting process. What is the safest way to vote? How can we verify large-scale mail-in voting? And maybe most of all, how can we motivate people to cast their ballot? These latter questions have been top of mind for Carolyn DeWitt, President and Executive Director of Rock the Vote, a nonpartisan nonprofit focused on making democratic participation more accessible and defending young people's right to vote. She says that this election year is unlike any she's experienced in her lifetime.
We knew that 2020 was going to be a major election year, and with the added complications of COVID, with the protests in the summer and the attacks on civil and human rights over the last few years, I think that there is a lot of concern around the future of our country, particularly on these issues. But I think even, you know, those who may have an appreciation and understanding of where we are as a democracy and the fact that we are losing power in our own system of government is really concerning. For instance, this will be the second presidential election without the full protections of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Not only is the concern around, you know, who the candidates are and what issues they are going to impact when it comes to social justice issues, which I think are really at the forefront of a lot of people's minds right now, whether it's immigration or criminal justice reform. The fact that we have not only some things we need to fix in our democracy to make it work for the people, but things that have actually deteriorated over the last few years or since the Supreme Court decision that really gutted the Voting Rights Act.
Welcome to PR Future, the podcast that delivers interesting insights into the dynamic world of public relations. Today, we're talking with Carolyn about how Rock the Vote educates and mobilizes voters on a national scale, how their mutually beneficial partnerships with brands contribute to civic engagement, and how you can make sure your vote gets counted. I'm your host, Fred Cook, and this is PR Future. Due to health concerns surrounding the pandemic, many people are planning on voting by mail, myself included. But how can we assure that our mail-in votes will get counted? Carolyn says the key is making sure you're following the instructions carefully.
Voting rights organizations like Rock the Vote have actually been promoting absentee voting for many years. Some people are calling it vote by mail, some people are calling it absentee voting, some people are calling it vote at home. It's all the same thing. Couple things about absentee voting or vote by mail. There are deadlines for requesting your absentee ballot, and there are deadlines for returning your absentee ballot. And I think one of the important things about completing and returning your absentee ballot that people need to pay attention to are, one, when you complete your absentee ballot, is to ensure that you are following the instructions very carefully. Make sure that if you have multiple signatures that you are using the signature that is on file with the DMV that is associated with your driver's license or state ID. You want to make sure that you're reducing the risk that your ballot will be contested. The other important component is going to be returning your ballot. There are deadlines for doing so. Oftentimes, counties and states will post two deadlines, basically the postmarked by date and the received by date. You want to basically ignore the postmarked by date and focus on the received by date. That is the date that you need to make sure that you get your ballot in by. If you have concerns about getting it in on time, then in many cases, what I would encourage folks to do is to look and see if you can drop your ballot off. Many states actually offer the ability to drop off your ballot at your local election official's office or drop your ballot at a designated drop site. It looks like a big mailbox, if you will, that is monitored and secured, and you can drop off your ballot at that location.
Rock the Vote is helping spread the word about how to make sure your vote gets counted this year. But beyond that, they're continuing their longstanding campaigns focused on mobilizing young voters.
Rock the Vote does focus on young people in particular because young people are a very unrepresentative group in our democracy. So, you know, democracy at the base level requires participation for it to be a democracy. And what we see is that young people turn out to vote 20 to 30 points lower than older voters in a presidential election year. In a midterm or in local elections, that's even greater. And that disparity leads to an unrepresentative government where those in power aren't really reflecting the values of the youth generation. Each youth generation is told that they're the problem generation, they're the lazy ones, they're not coming out to vote. But this is actually a historical issue in our country that if you look at those under the age of 30 and their turnout versus those over the age of 30 and their turnout, this is something we see every election cycle, and it is something that Rock the Vote works very hard to address, but we can't do it alone.
And what do you think are the primary factors that keep young people from voting?
Behavioral research tells us over and over again that the main reason is that they are new voters. They're new to the process. So the fact that they are unfamiliar in doing this for the first or the second time is a major piece of it. You know, if you think about it, we do very little, if anything, in our education system to prepare young people to participate. So young people don't necessarily even know the steps that they need to take in order to participate. So something as simple as knowing that there's a registration deadline or knowing that they have to register to vote. I mean, we're one of the very few democracies in the world that actually requires voter registration and then puts the onus on the voter to register. That in itself is a barrier. Not really having flexible voting options and the fact that many states still require excuses to vote early or take advantage of absentee voting. There is this very unfortunate narrative that their vote doesn't matter, that they don't have power to impact the issues that are affecting our country and our communities. But when there is even a very small sliver of education around how issues are impacted by those elected officials, then young people show up. So, for instance, over the last several years, there's been a lot of education around the role of district attorneys, particularly in criminal justice reform. And so we've seen in cities like Philadelphia and Chicago, youth turnout dramatically increase. In Philadelphia's district attorney race, youth turnout increased 279% when there was education around the district attorney race. But again, this comes back to education. And, you know, the process is important for young people to know, but I think we all could, quite frankly, use a lot of education around the process, particularly in 2020, but also a lot of education around what our elected officials do and when are local elections happening.
We found in our survey that the leading cause for activism, for the growth of activism, was the lack of trust and faith in the government. But we also found that activists feel like voting is the number one thing they can do to create change. So it feels like voting is, I don't know how to say it, is sexy right now, that people are realizing the power of voting in a big way. Do you feel that in your organization?
This year in particular, I think certainly the election and attention around voting was derailed because of COVID early on in the year. People's minds just weren't on it, especially young people who were moved off college campuses when evacuations had to happen and schools had to close. But what we saw at the beginning of the summer following or around the protests of the murders of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and others was an uptick and really a surge in voter registration. The fact is, this youth generation in particular are really inspiring because they've been overcoming significant barriers to participate. After they broke turnout records in 2018 for the midterm, we saw a number of states and people in power try and pass laws to make it harder for young people to vote in 2020. And so young people are, you know, fighting back and doing what they need to do, particularly with the Black Lives Matter movement. We've seen a surge of young people looking to voting as we need to elect leaders who reflect our values and who are going to be bold enough to implement the change that we want to see in our communities. Young people, they're very sophisticated when it comes to the issues. They have access to information and aren't afraid to use the internet to fact check things, to look things up, and they understand the intersectionality between these issues. They understand that you can't talk about healthcare without talking about women's access to abortion. You can't talk about gun violence reform without talking about criminal justice reform. And so they are looking for leaders who have bold visions on these issues.
Given you're trying to reach young people, and often people in underserved communities who are very difficult to reach by traditional means. They don't read the newspaper necessarily. They may not watch television news. How does Rock the Vote communicate such complicated and comprehensive ideas? How do you reach these people?
You know, your question is maybe twofold. One is, how do you reach them? And then the second is, how do you empower them with the knowledge that is going to be helpful for them in their decision making? And the first is reaching people through trusted messengers. And I'm not talking about, you know, when Rock the Vote was founded in the 90s, we didn't have the internet. You had A-lister celebrities who would walk the red carpet. And that's who Rock the Vote worked with. Our first celebrity was Madonna, right? So very big names. The fact that the internet has completely changed every kind of landscape, basically, that you can imagine, right? Media landscape. Technology landscapes. Who a trusted messenger is has completely changed. So that's not just a celebrity anymore. It's also activists, it's social media influencers, but it's also brands. I mean, young people really care about where they work. They care about where they spend their money. So brands actually have an important role to play. We also talk about trusted messengers as friends and family. I mean, the reality is the biggest influencer for young people is actually another young person. It's incredibly important for young people to be talking to one another. That's why Rock the Vote actually runs a relational organizing program that recruits and trains young people to talk to their friends and family, to ask them about, do they know what the process is to engage? Do they have any questions about the issues? And recruit them to also then, you know, once they're kind of bought into it and understand their power, recruit other friends. That's oftentimes one of the most important aspects and things that you can do. The other component is actually social media has really created, we'll say, a democratization of information. And, you know, just as I would say it's helped shine light on the experiences of individuals and their realities, particularly in the Black communities and the brutality that they face. The fact is, social media we can use to fight back against disinformation. We can use it as a way to share information and scale messages much faster than we could, you know, when you have to rely on things like print mail or door knockers or things kind of traditional, you know, political tactics of the past. Tufts University actually, Circle out of Tufts University had some incredible research after 2018 that found that reaching young people on social media enabled a much broader reaching more diverse youth than are in normal target audiences from campaigns and parties, because all young people, it's like 90% or more of young people are on one of the major platforms. So it's a really incredible tool that we actually have and can take advantage of.
Can you describe your communications team or your structure inside Rock the Vote that works all these different channels?
Well, we have a huge brand and we have amazing reach and drive a lot of numbers and impact. It's a misnomer that we're a huge organization. Just to give you some point of reference, in 2018, we're a 5-person team. We are fortunate enough that this year we have grown into the double digits, which is great, but we are a lean machine, which allows us to actually be quite nimble. We have a team that runs actually our civic technology. A lot of people don't know that we started building civic technology 20 years ago. So we actually power a lot of the voter registration efforts in this space. If you look at, you know, When We All Vote or Voto Latino, if you look at the bottom of voter registration efforts, a lot of that is powered by Rock the Vote. That all then gets run into basically our CRM. So we have a team that runs our email and our text messaging programs. Those actually walk voters step-by-step through the process. So we make sure that we're actually pulling out individuals' zip codes to send them customized information, which if you think about all the zip codes in the country and then providing customized information from when are registration deadlines, do they have early voting, all of that has to be done internally. We also have a team that runs our social media and creates content with us. And then we also have a small team that works with our brand partners and our talent and our, we'll say, also kind of media and entertainment partners as well.
I wanted to ask you about that too, because when we did our survey about activism, we found that a lot of brands are very reluctant to work with activist groups, but you have a lot of brand partners. Why do you think that you've been so successful at that when others have such a hard time with it?
I do think that the landscape has changed in the last 4 years. Some brands were very scared about even talking about voting because we've gotten to a very dangerous place in our country where even talking about voting to some people seems as partisan, right? Which is terrifying. But I think that, you know, with the leadership of some really, we'll say, forward-thinking, trailblazing, and bold brands, quite frankly, they stepped up and said, well, we kind of the leaders in this space, and we'll promote voting and we'll promote education and turnout and we'll talk about voting rights. And so that creates a, we'll say, a, you know, there's strength in numbers and there's safety when there's other groups doing it and other brands doing it. It becomes more popular and the norm. And so we've seen over the last few years, more and more companies dip their toes in, but then also go all the way in, right? And get even more engaged on this. That does involve a lot of times a lot of education. I also think that the reality is that the consumers and employees are demanding it. I mean, it, you know, that's the reality is this youth generation has enormous buying potential and they want to know that companies are sticking up for them. And so that's one piece. And likewise, young people are, because they're such a large generation, they're also the labor force. So they have a lot of power when it comes to where they work and being able to choose their future jobs. And so they're demanding that of their employees as well. So young people are really using their power in the workplace and in the consumer industry.
Can you talk about some of the brands that you work a lot with and how those relationships got started and how they work, what the give and take is between you and the brands?
We probably have now, I would say, almost 36 brands we're working with, maybe more. You know, we've had a longstanding partnership with HBO, with Levi's. We just announced a new partnership with Sony and with Nike, PopSockets, Zumiez, which is another retailer. Warner Media, actually our partnership from HBO grew into a Warner Media partnership. It varies a little bit on exactly what the company's culture is. So all of our partnerships start with kind of the idea of the brand, the company is, you know, stepping up and saying that we want to create a culture of civic engagement for our employees or for our customers or both. And so a lot of times we'll work with the brand side, the public marketing side, but in some cases we'll also be working with the corporate social responsibility or the HR team, depending on the company and its goals. And then it's a matter of creating sort of a campaign that makes sense for them. So, you know, what is their company structure? What is their company culture? How do they communicate with their employees or their audiences? You know, obviously with media and entertainment companies, they're in kind of a different category. And some of those other companies that might have huge marketing ability as well, because they have a role and take their responsibility seriously, that they can be conveying information and education and kind of being a, we'll say, amplifier in a much larger way than a smaller retailer could. There's everything from making sure that employees and customers have the information and resources that they need to vote and to participate, volunteer engagement opportunities as well. So, you know, things like encouraging employers and customers to be poll workers or to join our relational organizing program. We have some programs that we work where we actually train some of the employees to be what we call vote captains and take a leadership role in the company. So there are a lot of different ways that we engage with companies.
How do you evaluate a partnership like that when someone comes to you and says they want to work with you? What is the criteria you look for in a brand partner?
We're really looking for authentic partnerships. We understand that, you know, not everything is 100% altruistic, but we do want to make sure that we're working with brands that share our values and are not you know, stepping into this lightly, that they understand that this is serious business and we're talking about, you know, the future of democracy. And that's kind of the evaluation process, if you will, or things that we take into consideration. What is the investment of the company? What are they going to be really doing? Are they doing this superficially? Or are they really digging in and care about it? We have some companies where they really want to learn about the process. And once they go through it, actually, they're awakened to how hard this actually is. Sometimes it's really amazing to see companies come in and say, oh, we're going to register X number of people, right? And you try and tell them it might not be the case. It's much harder than you think it is. This isn't the private industry. And, you know, after they go through the process, there is an awakening. And so there actually, a lot of times, what we've seen is there's almost more investment and more ownership because they want to help fix the system. And so that's when a lot of times we see them step up and become longer term partners, that we'll say. In terms of how we evaluate after the fact, you know, we look at things like, How many people were we able to register together? What was their turnout like? How many volunteers did we recruit? What did their employees or customers think of this? How many people did we reach and educate? So there are a lot of different metrics. We are very passionate about making sure that we are working with partners to ensure that their work and that the work we do with them and the campaigns that we run are driving impact. So we do a lot of evaluation and metrics with them.
And Rock the Vote from the beginning, as you mentioned, has always had a lot of high-powered celebrities involved. How do they get involved and what is the role that they play for your organization?
A lot of times we hear directly from them because their familiarity with Rock the Vote. We've definitely seen an increase in influencers reaching out, not just musicians, actors and actresses, but also athletes. We work with a lot of athletes now as well. They have incredible platforms, especially when we think about their reach on social media. So a big part of what we ask them to do is actually become a distributor of that information, of vetted information. Not only does it help make sure that their fans and followers get accurate vetted information, but it also helps to combat disinformation, misinformation campaigns that we've seen creep up on social media platforms. We work with them to also highlight tools and resources that we have on the website, really empower voters to understand all of the different aspects to vote, particularly this year. In some cases, certain influencers will also have specific experience or a specific aspect of voting or democracy that they bring to the table. So for instance, we work with Jaren Jackson Jr., who's a Memphis Grizzly, and he was a poll worker before he turned 18. So he's very passionate about poll working. We just launched a partnership with Snoop this week. Snoop Dogg, for those who don't know him as Snoop, you know, he's going to be voting for the first time ever because he's a returning citizen and he always thought that he was ineligible to vote. And so there's a lot of education that can be done around, you know, making sure that people understand, even if they've been told they don't have the right to vote, to double check that because that may not actually be the case. And so making sure that we're working with trusted messengers to get some of those messages out to their audiences.
As we're talking, it seems like the task at hand for Rock the Vote in an election like this is enormous. And I'm trying to understand how, when you had five people a few years ago and now you said in double digits, how do you do all of this with such a small team? How do you make that happen?
There's not a lot of sleep. We can sleep after the election. One of the, I would say, fortunate things is that, you know, Rock the Vote has been working in the digital space for several years. I mean, we built the first online voter registration tool 20 years ago. There's a lot that can be streamlined with digital tools, and their ability to scale is really significant. To give you an idea, we have a lot of ground. We being a collective, we have voter engagement groups, a lot of ground to make up on voter registrations and those that, you know, basically the voter registration efforts that couldn't happen because of COVID and continue not to be able to happen on the ground because of COVID. And so going into National Voter Registration Day, we had over 500,000 voter registrations, more than we did at the same time in 2016. We tend to see a lot of high traffic on National Voter Registration Day across the platform. Usually we're running anywhere between 4 and 15 front-end servers. We were running nearly 50. So we are seeing a lot of traffic.
And you're probably not thinking much beyond November these days, but Where do you see Rock the Vote in the next 4 years? What do you envision for the future?
I'm really excited about this ballot tool that we have created, which is basically you can look up your sample ballot, which is pretty standard. But what we've done is we've actually collected, we're over 10,000 endorsing sources, which is basically like a pool of all these endorsements from newspaper editorial boards to issue nonprofits, advocacy organizations, political action committees, so everything from like the NRA to the Brady campaign. And so then you can actually select endorsing sources and see who and what are on your ballot endorsed. Next year is actually the 50th anniversary of 18-year-olds getting the right to vote. So that is a big moment for us. You know, one of the things that we have been working on over the last 6 years, we actually wrote a white paper in 2014 on what states can do to improve their technology so that it works better for third parties like Rock the Vote who are doing this work. Third parties like Rock the Vote are critical to reaching and registering and mobilizing marginalized voters, right? Those that aren't necessarily part of the system, who aren't going to the DMV all the time. And there are certainly steps that states can take to improve this. And we've been knocking on their doors for several years trying to get them to do this. What we've seen this year is a recognition that they can't delay on this anymore, that this is the future that we need to improve and streamline the process for voters if we want to be continuing to promote democracy. And so this kind of technology change that we've been talking about that in most cases does not include any policies. We've seen over a dozen states now say they want to talk and make these changes in 2021. So we're really excited about that.
Well, when you look into the future and you see all the things that are threatening democracy, but you see all these positive signs too, how do you personally feel about it? Are you worried about where the country is headed in terms of our democracy, or are you optimistic?
I'm cautiously optimistic. I fear being too optimistic because it means that we're sitting back and we can't afford to sit back. We have to press on. So, you know, there's a quick nap after November, December, but then we're right back at it. We need to be, you know, doing what we can with state legislatures next year around civic education. I think that's a huge thing that we need to focus on, as well as, you know, improving access to the ballot and voting rights. We don't talk about civic education as a voting rights issue, but it certainly is if we're not preparing people to participate when they turn 18. I think there is an increasing interest among voters to better understand what we can be doing structurally in our democracy to have it more reflective and more representative. So things like participatory budgeting, things like, you know, restoring the voting rights to returning citizens, conversations around is the Electoral College really working for us? So I think there are a lot of structural components to our democracy that have gotten some traction that we're starting to see a lot more attention around, that hopefully we will see even more in the years to come.
Through carefully planned partnerships and voter education campaigns, Carolyn and her team at Rock the Vote will continue to be a valuable resource for America's youth, helping them make their voices heard in the upcoming election and beyond. Their successful corporate partnerships demonstrate the possibility for real change when corporations and activist organizations work together. If you aren't registered to vote yet, or have questions or concerns about your ballot, check out rockthevote.org to make sure you're ready for this election, just like Carolyn is. And thanks for tuning in to PR Future, a progressive podcast created for PR professionals by PR professionals. To learn more, tap the link in show notes to download your copy of New Activism. And subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Today's episode was produced and recorded remotely in Los Angeles by Ron Antoinette and Zazu Lippert, with production support from Anthony Baca, Michael Bronstein, and Sarah Latman, all from the USC Center for Public Relations. I'm your host, Fred Cook, and this is PR Future.